Imagine this. Today, you literally remove tens of thousands of lines of JavaScript from your project. Just like that, all gone, straight to the trash. And you immediately discontinue all those complex and expensive cloud subscriptions. For many developers, that sounds like a utopia right now. Exactly. And it automatically translates your entire interface into 10 different languages. Yes, it sounds like a naive fairy tale from the early days of the internet, right? Back when we worked with simple blocks of HTML. Exactly. But for our fast-growing, almost rebellious group of developers, this is just everyday reality now. And that's the starting point of our exploration today. Definitely, we have a fascinating topic ahead. Welcome to this new and in-depth exploration. Today, we're diving into a heap of fresh source materials. We've got GitHub repositories, manuals, and code snippets in front of us about a platform called Flow. And just to be clear, we're not talking about a handy plugin here. No, definitely not.
It's a fully vertically integrated ecosystem. Right, a full-stack programming language and engine built on top of PHP 8 and newer. We're going to discover how this disruptive system manages to simplify complex matters like WhatsApp integrations or real-time updates into just a few lines of code. Before we dive into the code, though, I think we need to understand why Flow was even built in the first place. Yes, the philosophy behind it, because it really reads like a kind of protest. 100%. It's an outright rebellion. It stems from the observation that modern web development has, over the past few years, increasingly worked against developers. Could you explain that? Well, take the well-known dependency trees, for example. In the past, you wrote most of the functionality yourself, you know? Yes, or you'd use one or two robust frameworks. Exactly. But nowadays, we pull in an external package for every tiniest thing via NPM or Composer, and that package depends on 10 other packages. Yeah, and those depend on 10 others. Exactly.
These trees have become so impenetrably deep that no one, literally no major company in the world, can audit that entire chain for security or performance. Okay, let's unpack this a bit because it doesn't stop with dependencies. On the front end, JavaScript frameworks seem to have a shelf life of just a few months. Indeed, you're constantly rewriting to the latest hype. And then there's the cloud. The current cloud architecture feels like leasing a super modern sports car. A fitting analogy, right? But with a catch. Every time you turn the wheel or hit the brakes, the lease company sends you a microbill. Yeah, via those serverless architectures. Exactly. The better your application runs, the more you're financially penalized for your own success. And that financial risk is exactly why Flow mercilessly refocuses on readability, ownership, and affordability. Ownership in the sense that you self-host it. Yes, Flow avoids the entire serverless cloud pitfall by running locally via FrankenPHP, a super fast application server written in Go. And Flow uses this specifically in what's called worker mode. Oh, wait a second.
For those who don't configure servers daily, what does that worker mode really entail in practice? Well, traditionally, PHP has a shared nothing architecture. Okay? This means that every time you request a web page, the entire PHP process has to wake up. It needs to load files, build a framework, make database connections, all just to generate one HTML page? Yes, and then, and this is crucial, it forgets and destroys it all over again. The memory is completely cleared. With the next click from the same visitor, the whole circus starts anew. That sounds, when you think about it logically, like a massive waste of time and computing power. It is. But in the worker mode of Franken.php, your application is started once and kept continuously in memory. The server simply stays awake. So if suddenly thousands of visitors come, it doesn't need to restart constantly? Exactly. The worker picks up requests directly from memory. Since this relieves the server so much, you can handle an insane amount of traffic with just one simple cheap server. But what if your app really goes viral? What if one server can't keep up? Then you scale via the internet's most robust method, horizontal scaling.
You just set up multiple servers side by side behind a load balancer. And because the app itself is stateless, it doesn't matter which server handles the request. Exactly. This is the architecture that has kept the largest websites in the world online for decades. No magic, just proven technique. Clear. That gives you back ownership of your wallet and infrastructure. But when I look at the code itself in the sources, I see that the strive for readability has also radically changed the syntax of Flow. Oh yes, the parser. That's perhaps the most controversial choice in the entire project. Yes, because they use a line-based parser, completely without an abstract syntax tree. Yeah, and that makes the parser literally only a few hundred lines long. It's absurdly small. Let's dissect that term for the listener, an abstract syntax tree, or AST. What exactly does such a tree structure do normally? Simply put, an AST is a heavy internal translation machine. Normally, a compiler doesn't just read your code from top to bottom. It chops everything into pieces and builds a complex mathematical tree in memory to analyze what you precisely meant.
Yes, and only after that entire tree has been analyzed and often quietly rewritten does it generate the HTML or CSS. Plocko simply says no, throwing that abstraction layer out the window. So what then does Plocko do? The parser takes the first line of your code, evaluates it, generates the output directly, and then moves on to line 2. Very monotonous. And apparently, this means there are strict restrictions. I saw in Plocko's CSS syntax that semicolons are completely absent. Correct. You're allowed to write only one declaration per line. And I found this really stark. A simple empty line in your code automatically closes a complete HTML or CSS block. No closing brackets, just a blank line. Yeah, it's unbelievably minimalist. There's absolutely no room for interpretation. But wait, if I think about that longer, no spaces or blank lines allowed in large blocks of text? An accidental blank line that breaks your entire view immediately? I hear your doubt. Yes, because developers today are so attached to formatters like Prettier, right? They straighten out messy code neatly in the background. Isn't this a huge step back to frustrating systems of the past?
It's a very logical criticism, but if you place it in a broader perspective, you see the strategic trade-off behind this Spartan strictness. Okay, tell me. What you get in return is absolute 100% transparency. Because the parser knows that line 24 in your source code corresponds exactly with line 24 in the output, you get source maps and razor-sharp error messages almost for free.
Ah, so instead of a system that tries to guess what you meant, muddling things behind the scenes?
Exactly. If it breaks in Philo, the system points directly to the character-level detail on the line you just typed yourself. No hidden runtime magic. That demands a rigorous discipline from the programmer in exchange for absolute predictability. Quite refreshing, actually.
Certainly. But we've talked extensively about the back end and infrastructure, but the real test today is, of course, the front end.
No doubt, the expectations are high. Yes, users expect hyper-interactive web applications that respond instantly without ever undergoing a disruptive reload cycle. How does Philo deliver that if it refuses to use JavaScript frameworks like React or Vue? For this, the platform introduces the Apply protocol.
You see, modern JS frameworks are designed to keep the state of the server in sync with the browser, which means you often have to write logic twice. Yeah, and you're continuously pumping data back and forth. Flow refuses that. Instead of sending megabytes of JavaScript, the front end and back end speak exactly the same super simple language.
Yes, I read in the sources about Vue shorthands, like a hash for an ID or a dot for a class, directly in the markup.
Exactly. The Apply protocol allows the server to send very targeted commands to manipulate the DOM directly. So the server literally sends a command to the browser. Yes, from the server, you simply say inner with an ID to replace the text on the screen, or you use the command class to set a style class. There are even resource mods like Toast to pop up notifications directly on the screen, purely from backend code.
Here is where it gets really interesting, because if I envision this mentally, it feels like the server is a kind of master puppeteer, right?
Yeah, that's a great analogy. Through ultra-thin threads, the Apply protocol moves the limbs of the puppet, the browser.
And all without the browser having to run a complicated tech stack or framework locally. The puppet just does what the puppeteer says. You literally cut out a whole error-prone intermediate layer from your architecture. The server is the single source of truth. There was a fascinating practical example in the documentation about a polling station, a simple poll application, that made this really tangible. Oh yes, that's a fantastic example of Philo real-time. Yeah, let's say you click a button to vote,
That action goes lightning fast to the server. The server recalculates the result, generates the new bit of HTML, and broadcasts this in real time to all open tabs of other visitors. Question: what if my connection wobbles, or if the server's WebSocket crashes? In a React app, things often freeze then. Yeah, buttons suddenly stop working. But what's so genius about that polling example from Pylo is its fault tolerance. If that real-time thread gets cut, the system seamlessly falls back on old-school asynchronous HTTP requests. Graceful degradation, right? Exactly.
The app keeps working. The visitor doesn't notice any of that glitch under the hood. They don't get hit by fatal error messages on their screen. Really smartly thought out. And they apparently extend this efficiency to artificial intelligence as well. Because nowadays, you want AI answers to stream directly onto your screen, word by word. Yes, token by token. Normally, that's a real drama. You'd have to set up server-sent events, or SSE, with long-standing connections, timeouts, and then write complex JavaScript to stitch that streaming text together. It's awful. But with Flow, you simply set the property streaming to true in your backend code. And that's it. That's literally all. From that moment on, every word that the AI generates is automatically packaged into that same apply protocol and pumped directly into the DOM of the browser. The engine completely absorbs all this network complexity. Okay, so if we weigh it all up here, we remove that heavy JavaScript layer from the front end. On the back end, everything runs hyper-efficiently in memory via the worker mode. You suddenly have seas of computing power and bandwidth left over.
Is this the fundamental reason that Flow can build such advanced processes directly into the platform? Things that would normally require 10 different external subscriptions? Yes, absolutely. Because the foundation is so lean, you can natively run incredibly powerful tools. Just look at how they integrate AI. Yeah, the sources show they offer a single facade for almost all major AI providers. OpenAI, Claude, Gemini, DeepSeek, Grok. They flattened and standardized all those API differences. And that's great. When you change the variable model in your configuration, say from GPT-4 to Claude, the entire app shifts to that new model on the next click, without rewriting a single line of logic. This prevents vendor lock-in. You're no longer tied to the whims of one big tech corporation. If a cheaper model comes out tomorrow, just change one line and you're switched over. Elegantly simple. But what really fascinated me in the source code was the multilingual aspect. In a traditional framework, you're always wrestling with gigantic JSON files. Yeah, a separate file for English, one for French. And then you have to type abstract keys in your code, like navigation.home.title.
It's the most mind-numbing work in web development. Flow just sweeps that concept off the table. You type your text directly in your own source language within your view, like in Dutch, between curly braces. So curlybrace.nl.helloworld, and then your manual work stops. Because what happens then? Flow automatically detects the language of the visitor. If someone from London comes to your Dutch site, Flow displays the original text as a fallback, but at the same time, it fires off a request to your set AI to translate it quickly. Yeah, and then it quietly stores that result in a local cache file, a simple .ini file linked to a hash of the text. So the next time an English person visits, that text is already on the hard drive and displayed in milliseconds. Exactly. The system automates this entire translation process. No more maintaining translation keys. Brilliant. And then there's another super feature, the WhatsApp gateway. This is a bold architectural choice because integrating WhatsApp is notorious, absolutely horrible. WhatsApp requires a stateful connection, a long open line, and our web servers want to be stateless and free up memory.
If you mix those, your server stalls at the first message spike. How does Flow solve that? With a strict separation. Flow runs a fully isolated, separate gateway process on your server for your WhatsApp number, built on WhatsAppWeb.js. Okay, that's a separate unit.
Yeah, that gateway bears the heavy load. It maintains the WebSocket to Meta and handles the QR codes. Your fast application code never speaks directly with WhatsApp. But how do they communicate then? Incoming messages are pushed by the gateway as simple webhooks, lightweight HTTP notifications to your app processes and stops again. And if I want to send something back, then you send a quick request to the internal API of the gateway, and it delivers it to WhatsApp. This is not only great for performance, but also super safe. Your API keys and numbers aren't floating around in your active code. No, they're safely tucked in a secured creds.ini file.
And that raises a really important question, I think. Go on.
When we see a platform like Flow out of the box delivering AI interfaces, self-learning translations, and isolated WhatsApp gateways, it forces us to critically examine what we're currently doing.
Yeah, we're spending 80% of our time configuring. Exactly. Painstakingly piecing together faltering external SaaS solutions instead of actually building value. So, what does this all mean for you as a listener? The overarching theme is really the reduction of unnecessary noise. Flow molds the entire chain of technology, from your server to your views, into a single, uniform, and clear mental model, without hidden magic. It proves that progress doesn't always have to go hand in hand with more layers and more complexity. Sometimes the most potent innovation is daring to boldly leave out what you don't need. Beautifully summarized. And I want to wrap up today with one last rather provocative thought from the sources, something we haven't directly discussed yet. Flowzhou is specifically designed as agent first, right from day one. And that detail has far-reaching implications for the future. Absolutely. They have a special document in the codebase called skill.md, and it lays out the architecture so tightly and structured that an AI agent, a robot programmer, can write the code incredibly quickly and fully autonomously.
And when we consider that the ecosystems of the future will largely be built by AI, precisely, won't the current fragmented tech stacks, full of hidden magic, inevitably become obsolete? Not because they're broken, but purely because monolithic, strict architectures like Flowzhou are much more logical and faster for an AI to operate. It might be the only structure an autonomous robot can even decipher. A provocative thought to ponder over. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to the next in-depth exploration.